This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the president and CEO of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, Todd Mache. Todd talked about some of the problems that Illinois has and also talked about what is right about Illinois. For example, he said employment looks good in Illinois, but there are areas such as manufacturing which are having difficulty growing and finding qualified workers. The surrounding states, he said, have been more adventuresome in job creation, and they lead Illinois in new jobs. He also commented about the outmigration rate from the state of Illinois. It's the largest in the Midwest. Among the problem areas, he said, we are surrounded by a sea of right-to-work states. We also have the highest property taxes in the United States, second only to New Jersey. And our workers' comp issue must be addressed. Our workers' comp costs are twice as expensive as the neighboring state of Indiana. Some of the good things. Illinois is the seventh largest economy in the world. We're the biggest producer of agricultural products. 34 Fortune 500 companies are in the state of Illinois. We're the transportation hub for the United States and a leader in scientific research. Tremendous amount of foreign and direct investment has come into Illinois, and the chamber is a big supporter of the NAFTA program. He sees bipartisan opportunities for the coming year. The DACA debate, he hopes, will be resolved. A bipartisan approach to dealing with Medicaid issues. And most important, he says, campaign finance reform that will bring the issue of funding campaigns into daylight from the shadows in which it currently exists. Finally, he said, the chamber is against a financial services tax. Such a tax, he said, would create a ghost town on Chicago's LaSalle Street.
Thank you, Ed, very, very much. And thank you for the invitation to address you here, my first time. So I very much appreciate it. So I was going to do a few shout-outs, and then thanks to so many of you who came out, that would have taken all my time. So I do appreciate it. I do want to go ahead and point out, though, my staff that makes me look very, very good here at the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. They do great work, especially Kim and Joan. Find them, give them your card, and we can have a discussion about how you can get involved with the Illinois Chamber of Commerce as well. So since I did my own advertisement, I will let you know, Ed, that I am signing up. You got at least one new member today. So give a little love back. Get a little love back. All right. So what I wanted to go ahead and do today was really kind of just three things. We want to talk about some of the problems that Illinois has. We all know that Illinois has problems. We've got to talk about them. But today I decided not to dwell on them. And I, in fulfilling a promise I made to State Majority Leader, House Majority Leader, Barbara Flynn Curry, who, after 7 years of berating me about not saying enough positive things about Illinois, I want to make sure that we go ahead and have some time. So for Barbara Flynn Curry today, we're going to spend a little bit of time thinking about what's right about Illinois and kind of remembering why it is we're all here and why we do have a good future if Illinois can just get out of its way. Finally, though, what I really want to spend as much time on as possible, and I'll race through with some of this a little bit quickly, make sure we have as much time for discussion. And talking to many of you who come here regularly, a lot of feedback that the discussion, the questions afterwards, is really kind of the best value. So I'm just trying to prime the pump for the discussion to go ahead that we're going to go ahead and have. So I've got just a few slides that we're going to go through really pretty quickly. So where does, when you talk about Illinois, just like any place, I'm not the first person to say it, won't be the last, but so pretty much every economic problem you can think of starts with the solution starts with a good job. So here's just a reminder real quick where we've been. Illinois is the blue line looks good. So thank you, Director Mays, for your fine work. But I think Jeff will also tell you, though, this tells a little different story as well. Back in the 70s, 80s, Illinois would underperform during recessions and then snap back and outperform the rest of the nation in job creation. That chain appears to me to be very broken. That doesn't happen anymore. We continually underperform. So just some job numbers real quick. Illinois in the last 10 years, 65,000 jobs. 6,500 on average a year. Iowa, 75,000. Wisconsin, 100,000. Michigan, 200,000. Now, maybe they went a little deeper than we did, but clearly that is not the kind of job creation we expect here in Illinois. So part of the rates, and this gets a little wonky, but again, I've got Jeff here to bail me out if I need to. This is the participation rate. So what this tells you is that Illinois has more, if this number's right, I believe they are, has more individuals participating in the labor market than on the national average. But the reason this slide is in here is because it really is meant to set up this, which is there are fewer productive workers in Illinois, and that is a large part of the explanation for why you've got a participation rate that is better than the national average. So you look at Illinois, has an out-migration issue of 33,000 statewide. Cook County by itself, not netting out births and things, 66,000 individuals decided to leave for other states. my favorite must-read columnist from Cranes used to tell me, hey, this population outflow is just a downstate issue. Well, we all know now that Chicago led the nation in major metropolitan areas for out-migration as well. So this is a huge problem. So why are we here? And it's because, again, jobs. Yeah, there's weather. There's other things going on following your kids. But if you got to follow your kids to Florida, why are they in Florida? Because that's where the jobs are. So it comes back to jobs as well. So what are the public policy issues that impact, we believe, this number? We're going to go ahead and just focus on three. But the first one, we would point out, Illinois is now surrounded by a sea of right-to-work states. Right-to-work does make you more competitive. There is no doubt about it. I will tell you that, you know, insiders that were involved with the Mazda Toyota plant and the effort to go ahead and bring it to Illinois, hey, it sounded great to be in the game for a little while. We were never in the game. I'm just going to tell you. They were always going to build in a right-to-work state, and now we're surrounded. So what I always tell people who, my friends in organized labor, that you know what, we don't have to have right to work in Illinois to be competitive. These other states need to be right to work. They do not have our advantages. But we don't have to have right to work, but we've got to do something. Just standing on status quo is not going to work for us. Interestingly, though, just an aside, there's a court case that's still out there that says that a municipality can set up a right-to-work zone. Now, it was put on hold because it was in Kentucky, and Kentucky just went right-to-work. So Governor Rauner started out talking very aggressively about right-to-work zones. That may come back, and the next time you see this map, Illinois could look polka-dot-ish as opposed to solid white or what have you. So... In addition to right to work, this is property taxes. And this, if you didn't know, you don't want to be dark purple. And you also, if you didn't know, you don't want to be competing with New Jersey for the bottom position. We are. there are actually some studies that have us as the worst. I think it kind of flips back and forth. But this is a very, very frustrating issue for, I believe, because it's actually a bipartisan issue. Used to be when property tax caps passed, way back in the 90s, Jim Edgar era, it was a Republican issue because Republicans represented almost all of the suburbs. Now there are a few Democrats in the suburbs and a few other Democrats around, and they're hearing the same complaints about property taxes as Republicans have for decades. Yet, nothing has happened on this issue. I believe that the classification system in Cook County that shifts the burden onto commercial and industrial property is the single biggest hurdle to economic development in the state of Illinois. I don't know if we're ever going to touch classification, but some kind of caps, some kind of bipartisan effort to address this property tax issue is absolutely vital if the state's going to move forward. And then finally, it wouldn't be a chamber talk if we didn't talk about workers' compensation. So workers' compensation is incredibly important to almost all businesses. But also it has become a barometer issue to the rest of the nation as whether Illinois really can summon the political will to change a course. As you see now, again, this, you look at the graph, we're down at the bottom. Indiana is just the killer. We're twice as expensive as Indiana is. But all of these states that surround us are substantially cheaper. I think we're now eighth highest in the entire nation. But unfortunately, in the Midwest, we're far and away the most expensive state. So I think that workers' compensation has gotten a lot of attention. I'm actually very heartened. The Chamber has been an advocate, but so have a lot of other business associations, to really put workers' compensation at the top of the list. So when the Tribune, Cranes, whoever is writing about the need for economic reforms, we are now at the point where workers' compensation is almost always listed as the top. Yet we have a situation where trial lawyers in particular have made sure that the status quo just stays put. I would contend, I imagine labor would probably disagree with me a little bit, but if you could put the Illinois Chamber and our allies and business community together with organized labor, we could come up with a workers' comp reform bill in half a day. You put one trial lawyer in that meeting, nothing will happen. So workers' compensation is obviously very, very important. So we're on to the Barbara Flynn Curry part of the presentation. So, very first, it's a reminder that Illinois has still got so many assets. Yes, some of them are still assets because state government can't screw them up. But we are the 17th largest economy in the nation, or in the world. Part of that is also our GDP has grown to $790 billion, by far the biggest in the Midwest. Ohio trails us by $200 billion. We're twice of what Wisconsin is in Missouri. So gross domestic product, huge market, and that's why people still want to come here. I'll let you look at the other things. Obviously, great education, agriculture, number one, industry, great research institutions as well, and just take a look at those. Some of the highlights, we could have listed 10 more, but they didn't fit on the slide. All right, so the other story about, are we just trying to convince ourselves that we're a great state? Well, look at this. This is foreign direct investment. Global companies come to certainly northeastern Illinois, but across the nation, across the state. So if you're coming across an ocean and you can locate anywhere you want to in the United States of America, look how much foreign direct investment we have from out of the country. Last two slides, I'll just go ahead and do a quick commercial for the new economic development entity, Intersect Illinois. It's a public-private partnership that is now responsible for recruiting and growing jobs in the state of Illinois. So they are doing a great job. And Mark Peterson is their new head. It was just started by a good friend of mine, Jim Schultz, who was former head of the Department of Commerce, former chairman of the board of directors of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce. So Intersect Illinois is doing a great job. If you haven't met with them, I know Wintrust, I'll give you a Wintrust shout out. I know as a investor there, and many of you are as well. If you're not and you want to get involved in that, great work there. Here's some of the work that they've done as well. So positive economic growth. We all know that there are headquarters coming to Illinois, but primarily Chicago. Probably the biggest story about Illinois' economic development is the disparity between Chicago, where we stand right now, second only to Manhattan in the density of jobs anywhere in the nation. You head out even into the suburbs, but certainly downstate, and it's a different story. So that is why I think you'll hear, unfortunately, people like Senator Cullerton and even the mayor say, hey, these are the good old days, things are going great. Well, yes, where we're standing right now, it is going pretty well. The rest of the state is a completely different story. So last thing, and this is also a little bit of a commercial, the Illinois Chamber is involved with the state's bicentennial. We are serving as a fiscal agent and trying to promote a lot of the activity that's going on out there. So the bicentennial obviously is a time to kind of reconnect with our heritage, think about the things we've done, and hopefully remind us of our economic potential moving forward. So companies like United Pacific, Railroad are planning some really high-profile events. Abraham Lincoln signed the charter of UP, and it's a great tie-in, great reminder to the history. And then I think most people know that the Twinkie was also invented here in Illinois. I am here to tell you, though, that the rumor that they are not baked is not true. Twinkies are baked. That's one thing to know. So get involved with the Bicentennial. There's a great team. They're looking for ways to get people who want to be involved, whether it's financially or just be involved with a great activity. So let's then get on to what I really wanted to talk about here, and that is some bipartisan opportunities for all of us here in Illinois, and mostly in Springfield, to go ahead and actually achieve something in 2018. I know it's an election year. I know we've got partisan gridlock in Washington and in Springfield, but I believe that there are real opportunities for bipartisan deals that could go ahead and move us forward. So I'm actually going to start, though, out in Washington. So today is the beginning of the debate on DACA. That is a program that's a deferred action on childhood immigrants, and the Senate in Washington is starting to that debate just today. So DACA is incredibly important, and I will tell you that I'm shocked that the consensus that is building around reestablishing DACA. Of course, the president did away with the executive order that Obama put in, but gave Congress a window to go ahead and reenact it congressionally. I will say I think that that was the right thing. A lot of people think that Obama exceeded his presidential authority, and having Congress act is very, very important. But we have a real problem here in that there are differences of opinion. People like Rodney Davis, congressman, good friend of mine, downstate Illinois, he went from being an immigration skeptic to calling for a solution on DACA before the end of last year. So we're moving the right direction in a consensus. But what we've got, though, is so many issues that people want to put onto this issue that it's just getting too big and collapsing. So I am here today to call on Senator Durbin to go to the floor of the Senate and make a statement that says, Mr. President, we will give you your wall, but you've got to go ahead and enact 1.8 million DACAs. We think that's the deal that needs to be done. It is important that we get that out in front so that it doesn't become this Christmas tree, whether it be mandatory e-verify, all these other things. So Republicans, on their part, need to go ahead and limit their list of things that they want in exchange for DACA. But I think to get this done, and Senator Durbin has already exhibited a lot of leadership on this issue, but he needs to go to the floor and say, we will not let funding for some kind of barrier, border security, stand in the way of a final deal that allows 1.8 million immigrants to finally come out of the shadows fully. That is a deal that should be done, and it should be done quickly. Let me go ahead and come back to Springfield. There's another issue that is coming together, and I think it's hopefully we can get it done. But there's a vital financial issue in Springfield that needs to get taken care of, and that is the extension of an important Medicaid program that results in $3.5 billion of funds for the Illinois budget. So that is extension of, what do you call it, the bed tax, the hospital assessment. It is in danger of lapsing. And if it does so, that's $3.5 billion that gets added to the $8.5 billion backlog we've already got. That would be a travesty. Now, I talked to the governor about this personally on it, and he's not that big of a fan of the program. I will just tell you, and I don't think that's a surprise to anybody who's been around the issue. It involves Illinois getting a big pile of money, sending it to Washington. Washington matches it and sends it all back to us. So, if you were due to Medicaid from scratch again, I'm not sure you'd start with that program, but it is absolutely vital that when the governor gets this bill, he must sign it. That's $3.5 billion. There's no choice. It's really going to hold a lot of hospitals harmless. It's also going to help protect some safety net hospitals as well. There's a real debate about, do we have too many beds? Well, that's just too much to get done right now. Let's get this program done, and Medicaid needs to be taken care of. Taxes and regulation. There's a real opportunity for some issues to have a bipartisan consensus. The Illinois Chamber has done some of the best things we've done, included cutting red tape, getting almost near majorities to come in and say, you know what, if you need an air permit from the Illinois EPA, we're going to go ahead and cut the red tape so you get it much, much faster. Or if you're a small business, we're not going to permit you at all. You're going to send us literally a postcard to register for your permit instead. So that was a great, great successes. There's more of those to be had. The one that is out there that is also on its way to the governor has got to be the small cell promotion of 5G communications. AT&T. That bill has the governor needs to sign that bill as well. It will promote innovation, make Illinois one of the first states to get this technology, get up to 5G, and the governor can make it happen by signing the bill. So we think that that is very important as well. But there's also on the other side of that on taxation. We need to maintain what has been a strong consensus against a financial services tax. Yet again, we've already seen introduced a bill that would either tax at 20%, almost a gross receipts tax on financial services, or a individual transaction tax. Either one of them would create a ghost town on LaSalle Avenue. It would kill jobs. Does anybody think Terry Duffy is bluffing when he says, you tax all of my transactions and expect me to stay here? Heck no. So there's been a strong bipartisan coalition against that to keep that from happening. I think the mayor is part of that, and that needs to stay together. Finally, though, I wanted to talk about kind of what has actually been a long-time issue for the Illinois Chamber, but we haven't talked about it as much, and I want to make sure I brought it up today. And that is the fact that we now have 49,000 people in our correctional system. Thousands and thousands have passed through, and they're out there now. So the real question is, what happens, what can we do to make sure that they don't go back or have a cycle of experience with the correction system? The business community cannot determine the final outcome of that. They can't do it all. A small business person is wondering how they're going to meet payroll. How are they going to grow their business? They can't take on the entire correctional system and its product as well, but they can play a role. But I wanted to go ahead and make sure that I recognize the good work of the Safe Haven Foundation, and Brian is here. So thank you very much for being here and being my guest today. They do tremendous work giving all sorts of people the skills they need to be productive in the workplace. Including people who have had experience with the correctional system. So he's doing great work, and the foundation and Nellie is doing fabulous work, and I just want to recognize them today. If you're not participating with Safe Haven or any other organization and want to, we can help get you connected. So it's very, very important. They're available to do that work. But there is something that's bigger, because that's as many people as they serve. They can't serve the entire need here. So what we need from legislators is a little help to allow other businesses to go ahead and step up and hire people with a record. We've got a history of working with proponents on things like an acceptable version of Ban the Box. But we need to go take the next step and have protections from liability for hiring these folks. There's been legislation year after year to go ahead and establish some kind of liability for employers that do hire, and then there's something bad that happens in the workforce, and boom, the trial lawyers are on them. So there's another place where Democrats in particular have to go to the trial lawyers and say, this issue isn't too important for you to stop this legislation from going through. So employers need some reasonable liability protection, and then you would see, you really start to make a dent in this problem of what to do with these individuals as they come back, want to start productive lives, but can't do so without a job. If you don't have a job, you cannot get back into productive life. So it's absolutely important, and we would ask for your help in supporting our efforts to get some reasonable protection for legislators, for employers on that issue. So let me just go ahead and touch base then real quickly on two other issues that may not be quite ready. One is the infrastructure It's an election year, but it's absolutely vital. Illinois' infrastructure system is so important to our economy, yet it's the funding is about to drop off the table here. It's already been declining. In real value, our roads and bridges program and transit is already smaller than it was in 2000. And very, very important that we go ahead and get that done. And the last one I just go ahead and throw out there is an issue that I'm interested in. It is political season, and there are a few headlines out there. And I'm sorry that I didn't make quite as much news today as your last speaker. We don't have any ads on social issues ready to go here. Jeannie's a nice person. She really is. And she's a good vote for us, but I think maybe some questions about how she's running her campaign. I think it's time for the legislature and all of us to realize that the recently enacted cap on campaign contributions has been an absolute failure. We need to go back to a system that puts money into the sunlight as opposed through a 527 that really only emboldens a very small number of people and creates not a political class, but a consultant class, which is even worse because the consultants, frankly, they don't care if they win or lose. They're there to get paid. So the system then has robbed us from candidate accountability because so much money is running outside of the regular system, and candidates can say, well, I can't stop that. I can't coordinate with them. So I think it's time to end the disastrous cap on contributions. You're never going to keep money out of politics, so keep it in the sunlight where it needs to be. So with that, I would just say that I very much appreciate it, and hopefully we covered a little bit of ground. Not real deep, but hopefully also left some time for questions. So thank you very, very much today.
Okay, thank you for giving Todd a warm round of applause. And now we have time for some questions. If there's anyone in the audience that has a question, I see we get a member of our staff, Alex. I see a question over there. And anyone else? If not, you could write them while you're sitting there listening to some of the comments on the questions that we have. Okay, we have a couple of questions here already. The first one is from City Club member Antoine Ratliff, who's affiliated with an organization, Celestial Ministries. His question is, Todd, with the rise of social entrepreneurship and the positive impacts they can have on both communities and government budgets, does your office have any initiatives to help make Illinois a top destination for social entrepreneurs and social enterprise? If so, what?
It's short answer, I'm afraid, it is no. We do not have a special program along those lines. I will tell you, it was not that long ago that Illinois actually does have a Social Corporation Act on the books that says that if you want to go ahead and start a corporation, it's going to generate a profit, but it's not going to try and maximize those profits for shareholders, but rather devote a good portion to social activism, the social good. So that's about all I've got on there. I remember that bill. We were just participated in those negotiations, but no, we don't have a special program along those lines.
Okay, this is from Martin Dionne with the Quebec Government Office in Chicago, and he'd like to know what's your view and the Chamber's view on issues like free trade and NAFTA.
All right, that one's easy. T'd one that up for him. Obviously, we're very much for free trade. And Damien's here, and was while TTIP was still an active going with the Europeans to get a trade deal before Trump kind of squashed that. We are very, very supportive and really hope that effort can go ahead and get up and going. Obviously, NAFTA is front and center. We have had communications with both Canadian and Mexican consulates. I should point out Laura Ortega, who does our international program and does a great job there in advocacy. So clearly, I will just tell you that I was surprised, at least on the front end, how open both Canadians and Mexicans governments were about, hey, NAFTA is old. Let's go ahead and take a look at it. Let's see what makes sense. So the negotiation, I think, had some real opportunity to get going and a positive footing. But not surprisingly, I think we've seen the Trump administration pursue a really press a lot of issues and continue to, you know, threaten to tear up the agreement, which would be terrible. Canada is our largest trading partner in Illinois, billions of dollars of trade. Mexico is right behind as well. So NAFTA is very, very important to us. We just need to make sure that the Trump administration does not, if they can get a good deal, great, but keep NAFTA in place, reform it, do not repeal it.
Okay, thank you.
In fact, I think I read last week, we were talking about this a little bit, corn from Illinois sent to Canada, which feeds Martine and others their cattle. Then they come back here and end up coming out at McDonald's. Okay. This is from Charlie Gardner, who's a Roosevelt University trustee. Charlie's question is, you credit trial lawyers for our workers' comp problems. How about property tax appeal lawyers and our property tax problems? You get a lot of questions when you're up here. I mean, you know.
That's all right. No, we're not. Hey, I'd rather have it. Let's just say that issue is a little bit easier for us because I don't have to ask trial lawyers for anything very often. So over in the house, just a little bit more. I would just say that, yeah, I think that the system clearly is, I think the media has done a very good job of exposing it. It does certainly seem like an insider's game, and there should be more sunlight and such. I would come back again to the classification system that jacks up everybody, the commercial industrial property, and increases the need to hire a lawyer to go ahead and get them back down to where they should. So I would say the classification is a big part of that. Clearly, you've got what looks like an insider's club as well. I think that the efforts to go ahead and put sunlight on it, maybe some legislative remedies, makes an awful lot of sense and probably something we'd be very supportive of.
Okay, and in fact, for those of you interested, on March 8th, we will have as our speaker at a breakfast meeting one of the candidates for the Cook County Assessor's Office, Fritz Kagi. So you might want to put that on your schedule. Okay, this question is from one of your board members at the chamber, Kim Goddard, from Superior Ambulance, one of the sponsors of today's program. Her question is, does the right-to-work issue impact companies like Amazon and how they will choose their location for their second headquarters?
Quite possibly. I'll tell you that is the Amazon process, other than what you read in the media, is very much a black box. Amazon is a member of ours and a very good one. I've been there at ribbon cuttings, and they already have more than 10,000 employees here in the state of Illinois, not just in the Will County area, but down in Edwardsville as well. So I tend to think that it probably would have some kind of impact. I think that while I don't think unionization has been a huge issue for them, because they really do cycle through employees pretty quickly, actually with their own help. I don't know if people know this, but Amazon, if you go to work for Amazon, they will pay for your education to help get your next job, because they would rather have you for those 18 months than have to replace somebody every 6 months. So that's pretty interesting. So I would tend to think it's not going to be a top 10 issue. Certainly would help. But my guess is not a top tenner. At the end of the day, I think Chicago is probably a top three contender for the headquarters. When you look at the success we've had here, you look at the attractiveness of what we have, everything they've asked for, the transportation in particular, the interesting lifestyle you've got here. I was in Dallas for the first time not that long ago, and I remember thinking, this is a nice place. It's nice and big. But Chicago puts this place to shame. So I don't think that Dallas, maybe for location, what have you. Plus, you know how hot it gets in Dallas. I think Chicago is a top three location, probably with Boston, maybe a Florida location, but that's just because making predictions is interesting. I thought I'd go ahead and throw that out there.
So there was a question here. Thanks a lot, Todd, from Tom Bookie with the Jordan Knopf Investment Bank. And he wanted to know what the odds were. He wants to know, if he goes to Las Vegas, are there books on this, where is Amazon going to go? Do you know if they're, you know, wouldn't that be interesting?
Do not know. I'm going to guess yes.
Okay. Now, this is from Jane Grover, who's with the CMAP, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning. Is it realistic for a federal infrastructure plan to shift more funding to the state of Illinois and its municipalities?
I think that it can, but there's a step you've got to talk about that you've got to figure out first, and that is, where is Illinois and municipal funds to match it going to come from? That's the real problem you've got to go ahead and figure out first, because right now we can't maintain our local roads or our state roads the way they exist now. So if a whole bunch of federal money comes on in, we're going to have a new program to go ahead and actually access it and bring it on in. Otherwise, we will leave it on the table and all those other states will gobble it up like that. That has happened in the past. So I think that, yeah, it's possible, but only if the state develops a program that, and municipalities got to be included in that as well. A lot more roads, miles of roads on local level than on the state level. So we've got to have a program here in Illinois to be ready for that investment when it comes.
Okay. One of your slides indicated that Illinois is the 17th largest economy in the world. I don't think a lot of people know that. And why do you think more people don't know that and understand what that means?
Well, not to be redundant, it's Barbara Flynn Curry would tell you because Todd Meisch never says it. So we need to go ahead and tell the story a little bit. That's part of the reason I'm really excited about this Intersect Illinois group. Mark Peterson, now he's on the job. He's the one. He let us steal his slide. So that's his slide. So I'm trusting that he's got it there. So we've got a rah-rah story to tell. Part of it also is, I'll be honest, during the first part of the Rauner administration, when you think that there would be more of that going on, the kind of, political death match in Springfield has sucked so much oxygen out of the air that the opportunity to be kind of do a rah-rah and educate people about how good Illinois is has just kind of been lost. And I was telling Jeff earlier that I was with this, I think, was at the governor about 8 days ago, and I told him for, I think, the third time that, you know what, there's another story to be told here, that even if there are not great things happening in the legislature, and there's stalemate, there are great things going on in state government itself. We have returned state government to competency. Whether it's efficiencies, whether it's business practices, doing away with all those cobalt systems that are still running in the state. So slightly related, but I wanted an opportunity, an excuse to go ahead and make that case. State government is getting better, even if you're frustrated with the stalemate in Springfield at the legislature level. In our agencies, our bureaucracy is returned to competence, which is very, very welcome.
Thank you. Todd, by the way, Representative Curry is retiring this session. Have you and your staff given any thought to asking her to come on as a consultant?
Do you want to answer?
Okay, we have one final question here. This is from Alice Hanlon with Transplant Consulting. It's a very broad question in many ways. Aside from politics and state budgetary troubles, would you characterize Illinois as being business friendly? Why?
I think that, there are a lot of ways you can do that. What's your business? Tell me what your business is, and then I can tell you on how business-friendly Illinois is. Amazon is creating 10,000 jobs here. Geography is one of those things that we think state government can't screw up, and that's bringing them there. Ray knows that as well. So I think it really depends on what kind of business you've got, but overall the climate is very spotty. Again, depending on your business. I would also say that as much as we still lead the Midwest in gross state product, we should be doing so much better. I think that the governor really has one of his best lines is that if Illinois had just grown at the national average, we wouldn't have a deficit anymore. We would have so many more jobs that we'd be in much better shape. So pro-growth policies are important for everybody, even if Illinois is a pretty good place for where you need to be and where your industry needs to be. If Illinois can grow across the board, it's going to help everybody. So we've got to address some of these things that are out there, the fiscal problems, definitely just the uncertainty in the business climate. And just one quick example, research and development tax credit. Most states have one. And, you know, who's not for research and development? I don't care if the most liberal Democrat, most conservative Republican, for research and development. Well, in just the last few years, we have had a research and development tax credit repealed, reinstated, allowed to sunset, reinstated retroactively, sunset again. So who thinks that in that climate, that research and development tax credit made one iota of difference to somebody's planning for long-term research and development in the state of Illinois? So that uncertainty and this lack of stability is a huge issue, and it's really a political climate that we've got to go ahead and address.
Thank you. The governor is going to give his budget address, and then the legislature will respond over the next couple of months. Do you expect any surprises in the governor's address?
I will tell you that I was on the phone up here this morning dutifully trying to get some kind of insight, some kind of scoop for you on the budget address, and I got none. So I will just tell you that I'm told that the governor's in the past. Yes, if you look at those documents and there are, you know, $5 billion plug holes or plug numbers in the budget, I think you're going to see a lot less of that. There's going to be some smoke and mirrors just because the problems are so big. But I do think you're going to see further spending reductions. He is in it looks like an increasingly competitive primary, so he's going to need to go ahead and show his fiscal conservative nature. So I would expect more cuts, more ideas, and fewer, $5 billion plug numbers to say, well, we're just going to find that money later. There's going to be a lot less of that.
Okay, thank you. Let's give Todd Mace a big round of applause.